I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. For nearly 40 years now, Ken Rockburn has been a radio and television broadcaster in both the public and private sector. Since 2001, he has been one of the leading personalities on CPAC, the Cable Public Affairs Channel. His program, Talk Politics, is one of the few places on Canadian television to consistently feature in-depth, intelligent and thoughtful interviews and conversations with newsmakers, authors, and journalists, among others. He has recently published a collection of his notable interviews, Rockburn, the CPAC Interviews. Published by Penumbra Press, the book features interviews with Mayor Arar, Jane Jacobs, Sandra Oh, Rick Mercer, Peter Zosky, Hans Blix, Cindy Sheehan, and Alistair MacLeod, to name but a few. Its foreword is penned by the Globe and Mail's John Doyle. Talk Politics airs Sundays on CPAC. The book retails for $24.95. I am pleased to welcome to the Plant on the Line program Ken Rockburn. Good morning, Mr. Rockburn.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Not at all.
I understand this past week you interviewed Jean Chrétien for your program.
We did it actually in December. The show that was on this week was a repeat of because we were during the break over Christmas. We shut our studios down because when the house isn't sitting, we aren't doing shows. But yes, it was an interview I did in early December with him. Yeah, we did about almost an hour with him.
There is a difference interviewing politicians that are active as opposed to someone like Chrétien who's retired.
Oh, absolutely. The retired ones tend to tell you the truth.
And I was just reading, you've been with CPAC since 01.
Yeah.
Your program, has it always been weekly?
No, it was. It's only been a weekly this year and last year. Before that, it was a nightly show. For the first 4 years, I did it four nights a week, Monday to Thursday.
And in terms of, you know, you don't, from what I notice in watching your program the last little while, you don't have active politicians on. Is there a reason why?
Well, I used to when I did a nightly show, and that was mostly because when you're doing that four nights a week, you're doing 4 hours a week. You're doing more stories. You have to be more topical. You have to do things that are, at least for the purposes of my show, I had to do things that were current, if not that day, at least that week. So you tended to get a lot more sitting politicians in when you're doing something like that. When I went to a weekly show, which was my call, basically, I was just actually getting kind of tired, and they said, how about doing it once a week? And I said, sure, even better. And once we went to that format, you discover very quickly that you don't need to worry about a story being moved ahead a quarter of an inch, you know. You can do the broader strokes, you can do the bigger picture stuff. I found myself doing a lot more international oriented stories, things about you know, the Middle East and Afghanistan and that sort of thing. And once you start doing that, it's almost pointless to get politicians in that are currently in office, because if you want to do something that's longer, which is what I was doing, it's almost impossible to get them to do anything of any kind of length, because they all, whether they're in government or in opposition, they all have a message track, you know? They all have something that they want to say, and they're going to stick to it. They're not going to vary from it. And it just becomes kind of a waste of time. So I discovered that I wasn't doing that anymore. Now, mind you, once the Harper government got elected, that was all made dramatically academic, because they didn't want to talk to us anyway. And so the only effort I think that I made last year, the first year that I was doing a weekly show, was we decided that we were going to devote a single show each week, so that would have been 5 weeks, to the Harper government's five basic principles, or whatever they called them. You know, they had five platforms that they
right.
were going to deal with. And so we thought, okay, we'll take one a week, and we'll invite the minister responsible in for an interview on it, and then we'll invite the critics in, you know, not just the opposition, but also the NGOs and the, you know, civil society people and so on. And out of those five, and I can't even remember what they were now, but with those five issues that the Harperites identified, the only minister that we got in on the air was Diane Findlay, and then she was in charge of social development and human resources and that sort of thing. And she came in to talk about their so-called daycare plan. Which you'll notice has kind of evaporated since in the past year, and nobody talks about it anymore because it didn't create any spaces like they said it would. But she was the only one who came in, and so after a while I thought, what's the point? There's no point in doing this. I mean, my audience isn't getting anything out of it. I'm not getting anything out of it, so we just stopped.
Who makes up your audience? Do you know?
Good question, you know. I don't really know. I judging from the response that we get to things, there are people who are seriously involved in politics. They, for the most part, like the fact that I'm doing longer stuff. So I think it differs. I think it's probably a different audience than watches my colleague Peter Van Dusen's show, because he's doing a nightly show and he doesn't do anything longer than 6 or 7 minutes. So I think the people that are watching me and send me the sort of positive feedback I get from those people are people who like to hear about things in more detail. They like to get into the meat of an issue. By the same token, there are a lot of people out there who really don't like me, and I get my fair share of those too. The Kretschmann thing, for example, I had an unpleasant email from some. These ones are always unsigned, of course. The ones where they're trying to rip a strip off you, they never sign them. But somebody's, you know, demanding that I ask Kretschmann about the sponsorship scandal. And, oh, the question he wanted me to ask was, ask Kretschmann why he shouldn't be in jail. Now, there's a brilliant question.
Do you like it at CPAC? It seems to me that you get a lot of latitude as a broadcaster. Do you?
Yeah, I do. I'm not an employee of CPAC. I'm a contract person. So CPAC has a contract with the company that I have, and I am the product that's made available. So my arrangement with them is very clearly spelled out. And for the weekly show, it's just myself and one other guy, Dan Fonda, and we're it. And we book the guests and we decide what's going to be on. And Dan takes care of the physical assembly of the show with an editor on Friday night. So, yeah, it's a lot of latitude.
You've done a lot of radio interviewing. Was this your first television experience?
No, I did television in the mid-90s for 3 years at CBC Television here in Ottawa. I did a show called Rockburn and Company, and it was a half-hour weekly show that was profiles of creative people, actually. There was nothing political about this one at all. It was literally profiles of people who were writers and musicians and designers, anybody who was doing anything creative, and we would do, we would film these pieces with them sort of in situ, you know, in their studios and on different locations and then put it all together. It was actually a lot of fun.
See, I watch you on TV, and this is just someone as a TV viewer talking. I watch you on TV, and you seem very comfortable on television, but it seems to me that you, I mean, it's obvious that you came from a radio background in terms of your interviewing style, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Is there an adjustment that you have to make between interviewing for radio and interviewing on television?
Oh, God, yes. For one thing, there's the makeup, and I can't tell you what a pain that is. I've never gotten used to it. I've never gotten used to having to sit down and get makeup put on, and they do, you know, and they want to put hairspray on you, and I refuse to let that happen. And anyway, I have this ongoing battle with the woman who does makeup. But there's also I'm painfully aware of my drawbacks when I'm working in television, because, and when you said it's obvious that I come from a radio background, one of the physical giveaways of that is that I far too often put my hand to my mouth, and you should never do that in television. And I do it all the time, because in radio, it's kind of a, I don't want to say it's a trick, but it's a, in some instances, when I was doing radio interviews, if you ask a question of somebody and then you kind of lean your chin on your hand or do something like that, you look more thoughtful and serious, and it has an effect on the guest and what the guest is going to say to you. But I do it in television, and I realize when I do watch myself, and I try not to because it makes me uncomfortable, but when I do watch myself, I notice that I do it a lot, and I shouldn't be. In fact, I'm doing it right now, and I shouldn't be doing it at all.
The other thing that I noticed, and this sounds stupid, but I mean, I'll bring it up anyway. You wear a lot of pins on TV.
I've always had pins. There are some people who like that, and there are some people who just can't stand it. But
yeah, I was just wondering what people think about that.
Well, it's interesting. I have dozens of them, and I started collecting them a couple of decades ago. Actually, I bought the first one when I was in New Orleans in the early 80s with my wife, and I just saw one that I really liked, and it happened to be a fish, and I bought it. And then it's gathered over the years. I bought some, and then other people bought them as gifts. I actually have one that I wear that Patty Torsney, who was an MP, isn't anymore, but that she sent me because she saw that I wore pins, sent me this great fish pin. I got a package once, this is about 3 years ago at CPAC, in the mail from a woman in Iqaluit. And she sent me, and I still wear them actually, two very nice ivory pins. One was an Inuit drummer, and the other one was a jumping whale, and they're lovely. So, but then there are other people who, you know, think I'm some kind of, you know, faggot.
Putting this book together, was this fun for you?
It was, actually. It was an interesting experience doing it, because it's straight. I did another book in '95 called Medium Rare, and it was Stoddard, when it used to exist. Stoddard published that one, and that was a narrative of interviews that I had done in radio. For this, I did this program when I was in private radio called Medium Rare, and won some awards and stuff. And I was asked to do this book with the interviews in that. But it was a narrative. I was asked to write I had to write my impressions, and the interviews were as like magazine articles almost. And I was really uncomfortable doing that, because I don't think I'm that great a writer. So this one was just the straight transcripts, and I did all the transcribing myself and just cleaned up the ums and ahs and so on. And again, when you do that, it's an interesting experience, because you start realizing your own idiosyncrasies when you're asking questions. I know after I'd done about 7 or 8 of them, I was practically yelling at myself as I'm sitting in front of my laptop doing this and watching the DVDs of the interviews that I had, because I discovered that very often I was asking questions like Yoda, you know, and you went there, why? You know, and it was making me nuts. So it was kind of a learning experience.
Do you think you've got a style of your own?
In interviewing?
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. I would like to think that I do, but I'm not exactly sure what it is. I have to give a workshop this week, actually, on interviewing. Why I agreed to this, I don't know, but the Canadian University Press, all the editors, they have a national convention, and it's here at the University of Ottawa, and they asked me if I would do this workshop. And I realized as I was trying to put things down that it's almost impossible to tell people how to do this, right? I mean, I can think of some solid examples of stuff to give them, but I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to tell them in this workshop. And when you ask about style, that's another thing. I think if I watch other interviewers, I notice styles in other interviewers. I can sometimes be rambling in a question, though I don't think I'm as rambling and as discombobulated as, say, Don Newman can be when he asks a question. There are interviewers out there that I admire, and there are ones that I don't. And the ones that I admire have a certain style. Steve Paikin, I think, is one of the best interviewers in the country on TV Ontario. I guess I have a style, but I'm not sure what it is.
You're right about Steve. We've had him on a couple of times, and he just seems likable on television.
Yeah, he's excellent, and he knows his stuff. He's very self-assured, and he knows his stuff. I really like him.
Who don't you like?
Oh, Evan Solomon.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's too full of himself. I think he commits the cardinal sins of interviewers everywhere. And this is something that I will mention in the workshop that I do, too, that he's one of those interviewers who wants the audience to know that he really knows the answer to this question. He's only asking it on your behalf. You know, I watched him do an interview once with Noam Chomsky, and it was the most painful thing I think I've ever seen, because all he wanted to do was let Noam Chomsky know that he was a smart, that he, Evan Solomon, was a smart guy. And so his questions were just idiotic, and I can't stand that kind of that technique at all.
In terms of
you're an interviewer, you're asking on behalf of your audience, and you don't need to, you know, you don't need to show off.
Do you find that you're astonished still by some of the answers that you get, even though when you're putting together your questions, you seem to know what the answers are?
Oh yeah, and I never do. When I worked at the CBC, CBC Radio for 6 years. I mean, CBC, they love the pre-interview. They love it, you know? And when I went into CBC, this just floored me. I like the spontaneity of an interview. I don't want to know what they're going to say. I don't want some associate producer to have interviewed this person ahead of time so that we have an idea of what they're going to say to every single answer. And yet that's what CBC just loves to do. So I, you know, we don't do that. Well, first of all, we don't have the resources, but even if we had the resources at CPAC, I certainly wouldn't do it. I wouldn't pre-interview people. I mean, if you've got a guest and you know that they know about the topic that you're interested in, that's all you need, and they're either going to be a good interview or they're not. But, you know, you want to be surprised by answers more often than not, and you want to be able to take an interview in a different direction if the answers that you're getting call for that. And if you've got it all laid out like roadmap in advance, that's not going to happen. There's going to be any spontaneity. It's just going to be this, you know, kind of drone.
And do you do a lot of preparation?
Yeah, I do, actually. On the weekly show, I find that I tend to do, I do a lot of books, which I didn't do on the nightly show. I used to do them, but I tend to do, well, actually, it's probably not more, it just feels like more because it's a weekly show, not a nightly show, but I do a lot of books, and I read them, but I always have. I mean, for the last, out of the, you know, nearly 4 years that I've been doing this, for at least the last 25, I've made an effort to read every single one of them, unless you get them, like, 2 days ahead of time, and then you can't. But if that's the case, I always let the author know that I didn't have time to do it, but I read as much as I could. Because somebody slaves over a book, and, you know, I mean, in the case of nonfiction works, which is mostly what I'm doing on this show anyway, you know, they've done all this research, they've worked like hell on it. You can't insult them by, you know, pretending to have read it if you haven't, or, you know, that sort of thing.
In terms of picking the people for this book, are there 22 interviews in here, are there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think it represents? Does it just represent the sort of people that have been on, or just your favorites, or...?
They were sort of my favorites, I think, and I wanted to have a cross-section of stuff. So the ones that aren't political, the Sandra Oh's and the Ian Tysons, they all come from a show that I did the first 2 or 3 years. I think we did it for 3. Called Rockburn Presents, because when I first started at CPAC in 2001, I was doing 2 shows. I was doing Talk Politics every night, but then I was doing this weekly show called Rockburn Presents, and that was an hour-long show with 2 interviews in it. And the only criteria for that one was, I guess we just did it for 2 years, yeah. The only criteria was that the guest had to be Canadian, but it didn't have to be political. And so I could do anybody as long as they were Canadian. And that's why those interviews got into it. Now, that show got deep-sixed after CPAC got its license renewed, because in one of those quid pro quo things that they do in all license renewals, CPAC wanted something from the CRTC, and then exchange for that, they agreed to not do any more programming that wasn't directly and overtly political, and so that show had to go away. But I wanted some of those ones in there. I didn't want this to be... there are no politicians in the book, at least not elected politicians. But I wanted sort of the lighter, the more fun cultural entertainment stuff, and then I wanted some of the heavy stuff in there as well. But, I had a bunch of stuff to choose from, and Dan Fonda and I and another fellow who was a producer with me for quite a while, Trevor Heggie, we all sort of hashed it over, and it's one of those things where you've done so many interviews and you're trying to remember who you did, and I had made a list, and I said, you know, I know we've got other people that are really good, and it just drives me nuts. So they were kicking names into the pot and stuff, and then I just weeded them all down, and 22 seemed to be a comfortable number in a decent-sized book.
What's in the book that you'd have liked to have been in it?
That I would have liked to have been in it?
Yeah.
I did a thing with Oliver Jones that isn't in there that I think would have been fun to include. I was thinking about that only when Oscar Peterson passed, actually, and Oliver's name came up a couple times. But I interviewed him before. I interviewed him when I was at CBC and stuff, so we did a big thing with him. That was a lot of fun. I did a thing with one of the ones that I was toyed with putting in, but then decided not to, was with Henry Morgenthaler. We did a long interview with him. We went to his clinic and did it there. It was a long sit-down thing. We went back over his whole career and stuff. And I thought, you know, for historical purposes, should I put this in there? And I thought, well, you know, everybody kind of knows the story. So I left it out. Who else was there? There were other ones. Jane Urquhart. I did a long thing with Jane, but I've known her for a long time and interviewed her many times. In fact, I saw her a few weeks ago. I did a really nice thing with her that I could have used, but I decided not to. I don't know, stuff like that, you know. I mean, it's, you had to draw the line somewhere, you know.
Some of the interesting things that I noticed, you write little prefaces to these interviews in the book.
Yeah, that was my only contribution. that and the introduction, that was it.
And one of the things that you write about, you were nervous interviewing Phyllis Lambert.
Oh, God, yes.
Who is Phyllis Lambert, for people that don't know?
All right, Phyllis Lambert, she's the head of the architecture museum in the city of Montreal. She is a Bronfman. She is the heir to the Bronfman fortune. She is an architect herself. She's a colleague of Mies van der Rohe. She's what stunned me, and I think I wrote this in the introduction, was that I didn't realize when we interviewed her, because only a couple of years back, how old she was. But just last year, I saw articles in the Montreal Gazette about this huge gala celebration to mark her 80th birthday. The woman looks like she's 50. I mean, it was astonishing to me when I discovered that she was that old. But she's very, I guess for all kinds of reasons, she's probably because of being wealthy all of her life and extremely wealthy, but also extremely disciplined, you know, and she has this power, not just financial power, but, you know, through the stuff that she's done in architecture and so on. And she's a very no-nonsense, opinionated woman. And she doesn't do interviews very often. And we managed to convince her to sit down with me. And I was extremely intimidated going into this. And when you read the transcript, you can see at the beginning I asked her questions about her background and what she took in school. And she said, I think she said at the beginning she took a liberal arts degree. And I said something like, because I was surprised, I would have thought that she would have done architecture right off the bat. And I said something like, just a liberal arts degree. And she said, well, not just a liberal arts degree. You know, it was like that sort of thing. I thought, oh, man, this is not going to go well. But then she sort of got into it, you know, and we did about half an hour. And when it was all over at the end of it, she did say that she really enjoyed it, which kind of surprised me because she didn't look like she was enjoying it at all. But she actually smiled, and she has a very sort of constrained smile, but she said, no, that was good. You asked interesting questions. I hadn't thought of those things before. So it was a great sigh of relief that we left. But that was one of those. It's not often that I'm intimidated by somebody, but she really scared the bejesus out of me. So.
Is that the goal, Ken, to make the guest feel comfortable, or is it to get your answer, the answers to the questions you want? Or
well, in the case of interviews like this, the goal is to make them comfortable enough to talk to you and tell you things that may not have occurred to them before. And you're always trying to get the answer that nobody else has got, right? And these are not confrontational interviews. I mean, it's not me trying to extract a tooth from somebody or anything like that. And so, yes, you do want to make them comfortable. And there are all kinds of ways you can do that. In the moments beforehand, before the cameras actually start rolling, when they're miking you up and you're sitting there and you're, you know, the small talk that you make with the guest is one of the key things to establishing that relationship. And I will often, if it's somebody who you know is uncomfortable doing this or might feel a little nervous about doing it, I always tell some little anecdote or something that makes me look like an idiot. You know, something that makes me look sort of flawed and human, so that we can both sort of laugh at me. And that always puts them at their ease, because then they don't see me as a threat anymore. And then it usually makes things go better.
Someone like Peter Zosky, who is featured in this book, well, is that easy because you're in the same sort of line of work, or is it harder for you?
Well, we'd done things, I think I wrote in the introduction, we knew each other professionally, and I'd done interviews with him in the past, and he was a very competitive guy, and we both had these national radio awards, and I had written once about how he was sort of very, very careful to make sure that he pointed out that he had more than me. But when we did that last one with him, and it was, I think, the second last one, I think the woman, Tina, I've forgotten her last name, we always call her Tina Alphabets because nobody could ever pronounce her last name, Sobrotniak, I think her name is.
Right.
TV Ontario.
Yeah.
She used to do Imprint, she did Imprint, she did the other show that they had. Anyway, I think she did the last interview with him, and that was just a couple of weeks after I did, and then he passed away. But when we did that one, it was, you know, we did it in his house, and he was, I, you know, even though he said at the beginning of the interview that he was doing better and that he was going to this, you know, the Breathing Academy or whatever he called it, and that, you know, things were looking up, he didn't look well. But he was so, you know, he was so accommodating. He was way more accommodating than he'd ever been at any other point when I interviewed him, you know, in the 20 years previous. You know? And I think he was out of it at that point. You know, he was looking back on it, and it was pleasant. And one of the fun things about that, of course, was at the very end of it. And we'd finished the interview, and I thanked him. And I think I left this in the transcript. And we aired it as well. He said, how come they don't call you Roburn like Bruce? And the only thing I think I left out was that I started to laugh, and I said, oh, shit. And I think we left that in when we broadcast it, but I didn't put it in the transcript. But
it's obvious that you still enjoy doing this. How long do you see yourself doing this?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know. I'm getting really tired of doing the political stuff, I got to tell you. It's just, you know, I'm back on the air with new shows. I think this coming week is a repeat, and then we're back with new shows. The first new show was already done. But I'm, you know, today, I spent the day today lining up people.
people come in the studio in 2 weeks, and we get back into it and go right until June. But I don't know. I would love to get back to doing other stuff other than political stuff. I mean, I don't mind the political stuff, but a steady diet of it for 6 years, it starts feeling like news for mice after a while, you know? Every story's got to have the word cheese in it, you know, that sort of thing. It's just, I would love to go back to being able to interview people on the creative side of things, because I love that just as much.
Ken, this has been fascinating and fun to do this with you. As you know, I'm such a fan of your program.
Well, that's great.
And I bought the book over the Christmas holidays.
One more.
and I was reading it, and I just thought we will ask him to come on. If he'd come on, we'll talk about it.
Oh, good. I'm
so,
glad you did.
So we'll watch you Sunday.
Okay.
The book is called Rockburn, the CPAC Interviews, $24.95 from Penumbra Press. And if you're like me and you're not home Sundays, most Sundays, you can watch them on CPAC. They've got a bunch of Ken's interviews there. And you can just watch them on your computer. They're great. CPAC.ca is the website. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Planta.